Chapter 2. How Not to Die from Lung Diseases. The worst death I ever witnessed was that of a man dying of lung cancer. I was interning at a public health hospital in Boston. Evidently, people dying behind bars looked bad for prison statistics, so terminally ill prisoners were shipped to my hospital for their final days, even if there was little we could do for them. It was summer, and the prisoner's ward had no air conditioning, at least for the inmates. We doctors could retreat to the chilled confines of the nursing station, but the inmates, handcuffed to their beds, just lay prostrate in the heat at the top floor of this tall brick building. When they were shuffled down the hall in front of us, ankles chained together, they left a trail of sweat. The night the man died, I was on one of my 36-hour shifts. We worked 117-hour work weeks back then. It's amazing we didn't kill more people ourselves. Overnight, there were only two of us, myself and a moonlighting doctor who preferred to sleep for his $1,000 a night paycheck. So most of the time, I was on my own to cover the hundreds of patients there, some of the sickest of the sick. It was on one of those nights that, staggering through a sleep-deprived haze, I got the call. Up until then, all the deaths I'd seen were those in which the patient was either dead on arrival or died during cardiac codes, when we tried to desperately and nearly always unsuccessfully try to resuscitate. This man was different. He was wide-eyed, gasping for air, his cuffed hands clawing at the bed. The cancer was filling up his lungs with fluid. He was being drowned by lung cancer. While he thrashed, desperately pleading, my mind was in medical mode, you know, all protocols and procedures, but nothing much could be done. The man needed morphine, but that was held on the other side of the ward, and I'd never get to it in time, let alone back to him. I was not popular on the prison floor. I'd once reported a guard for beating a sick inmate and was rewarded with death threats. There's just no way they'd let me through the gates fast enough. I begged the nurse to try to get some, but she didn't make it back in time. The man's coughing turned into gurgling. Everything's gonna be okay, I said. Immediately, I thought, what a stupid thing to say to someone choking to death. Just another lie and probably a long line of condescension from other authority figures throughout his life. Helpless, I turned from doctor back to human being. I took his hand in my own, which he then gripped with all his might, tugging me toward his tear-streaked, panic-stricken face. I'm here, I said. I'm right here. Our gaze remained locked as he suffocated right in front of me. It felt like watching someone being tortured to death. Take a deep breath. Now imagine what it would feel like not to be able to breathe. We all need to take care of our lungs. America's number two killer, lung disease, claims the lives of about 300,000 people each year. And like our number one domestic killer, heart disease, it's largely preventable. Lung disease can come in many forms, but the three types that kill the most people are lung cancer, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, and asthma. Lung cancer is our number one cancer killer. Most of the 160,000 lung cancer deaths every year are the direct result of smoking. However, a healthy diet may help mitigate the DNA-damaging effects of tobacco smoke, as well as perhaps help prevent lung cancer from spreading. COPD kills approximately 140,000 people annually from either damage to the walls of tiny air sacs in the lungs, called emphysema, or from inflamed and thickened airways plugged with thick mucus, called chronic bronchitis. Although there's no cure for the permanent lung scarring that COPD causes, a diet rich in fruits and vegetables may help slow the progression of the disease and improve lung function for its 13 million sufferers. Finally, asthma, which claims 3,000 lives each year, is one of the most common chronic diseases among children, yet it may be largely preventable with a healthier diet. Research suggests a few extra daily servings of fruits and vegetables can reduce both the number of cases of asthma during childhood and the number of asthma attacks among people with the disease. Lung cancer. Lung cancer is diagnosed about 220,000 times each year in the United States and causes more deaths annually than the next three cancers combined, those of the colon, breast, and pancreas. At any given moment, nearly 400,000 Americans are living under lung cancer's dark shadow. Unlike with heart disease, which is yet to be fully acknowledged as the direct result of an artery-clogging diet, there is widespread recognition that tobacco is by far the most common cause of lung cancer. According to the American Lung Association, smoking tobacco contributes to up to 90% of all lung cancer deaths. Men who smoke are 23 times more likely, and women 13 times more likely to develop lung cancer than non-smokers. And smokers aren't just harming themselves. Thousands of deaths each year have been attributed to secondhand smoke. Non-smokers have a 20-30% higher risk of developing lung cancer if they're regularly exposed to cigarette smoke. Those warning labels on cigarette packs are everywhere now, but for a long time the link between smoking and lung cancer was suppressed by powerful interest groups, much as the relationship between certain foods and other leading killers is suppressed today. For example, in the 1980s, Philip Morris, the nation's leading cigarette manufacturer, launched the notorious White Coat Project. The corporation hired doctors to publish ghost-written studies purporting to negate links between secondhand smoke and lung disease. These papers cherry-picked various scientific reports to conceal and distort the damning evidence of the dangers of secondhand smoke. This whitewashing, coupled with the tobacco industry's clever marketing campaigns, including cartoon-like ads, helped hook generations of Americans onto their products. If, despite all the evidence and warnings, you're currently a smoker, the most important step you can take is to stop. Now. Please. The benefits of quitting are immediate. According to the American Cancer Society, just 20 minutes after quitting, your heart rate and blood pressure drop. Within a few weeks, your blood circulation and lung function improve. Within a few months, the sweeper cells that help clean the lungs, remove mucus, and reduce the risk of infection start to regrow. And within a year of quitting, your smoking-related risk of coronary heart disease becomes half that of current smokers. As we heard in Chapter 1, the human body possesses a miraculous ability to heal itself as long as we don't keep re-injuring it. Simple dietary changes may help to roll back the damage wrought by the carcinogens in tobacco smoke. Load up on broccoli. First, it's important to understand the toxic effects of cigarettes on the lungs. Tobacco smoke contains chemicals that weaken the body's immune system, making it more susceptible to disease and handicapping its ability to destroy cancer cells. At the same time, tobacco smoke can damage cell DNA, increasing the chances for cancer cells to form and flourish in the first place. To test the power of dietary interventions to prevent DNA damage, scientists often study chronic smokers. Researchers round up a group of longtime smokers and asked them to consume 25 times more broccoli than the average American, in other words, a single stalk a day. Compared to broccoli-avoiding smokers, the broccoli-eating smokers suffered 41% fewer DNA mutations in their bloodstream over 10 days. Is that just because the broccoli boosted the activity of the detoxifying enzymes in their livers, which helped clear carcinogens before they even made it to the smoker cells? No, even when DNA was extracted from the subject's bodies and exposed to a known DNA-damaging chemical, the genetic material from the broccoli eater showed significantly less damage, suggesting that eating vegetables like broccoli may make you more resilient at a subcellular level. Now, don't think this means that eating a stalk of broccoli before smoking a pack of Marlboro Reds is going to completely erase the cancer-causing effects of cigarette smoke. It won't. But as you're trying to quit, such vegetables as broccoli, cabbage, and cauliflower may help prevent further damage. The benefits of these broccoli family cruciferous vegetables may not stop there. While breast cancer is the most common internal cancer among American women, lung cancer is actually their number one killer. About 85% of women with breast cancer are still alive 5 years after diagnosis, but the numbers are reversed when it comes to lung cancer. 85% of women die within 5 years of a lung cancer diagnosis. 90% of those deaths are due to metastasis, the spread of the cancer to other parts of the body. Certain compounds in broccoli may have the potential to suppress this metastatic spread. In a 2010 study, scientists laid down a layer of human lung cancer cells in a petri dish and cleared a swath down the middle. Within 24 hours, the cancer cells had crept back together, and within 30 hours, the gap had closed completely. But when the scientists dripped some cruciferous vegetable compounds onto the cancer cells, the cancer creep was stunted. Whether or not eating broccoli will help prolong survival in cancer patients has yet to be tested in clinical trials. But the nice thing about healthy dietary interventions is that since there are no downsides, they can be added to whatever other treatments one chooses. A side note, smoking versus kale. Researchers have found that kale, that dark green leafy vegetable dubbed the queen of greens, might help control cholesterol levels. Researchers took 30 men with high cholesterol and had them consume 3 to 4 shots of kale juice a day for 3 months. That's like eating 30 pounds worth of kale, or the amount the average American consumes in about a century. So, what happened? Did they turn green and start to photosynthesize? No. What the kale did do was substantially lower their bad LDL cholesterol and boost their good HDL cholesterol as much as running 300 miles. By the end of the study, the antioxidant activity in the blood of most participants had shot up, but curiously, the antioxidant activity in a minority remained flat. Sure enough, these were the smokers. The free radicals created by the cigarettes were thought to have actively depleted the body of antioxidants. When your smoking habit erases the antioxidant-boosting effects of 800 cups of kale, you know it's time to quit. Carcinogen-blocking effects of turmeric. The Indian spice turmeric, which gives curry powder its characteristic golden color, may also help prevent some of the DNA damage caused by smoking. Since 1987, the National Cancer Institute has tested more than 1,000 different compounds for chemopreventive, in other words, cancer-preventing activity. Only a few dozen have made it to clinical trials, but among the most promising is curcumin, the bright yellow pigment in turmeric. Chemopreventive agents can be classified into different subgroups based on which stage of cancer development they help to fight. Carcinogen blockers and antioxidants help prevent the initial triggering DNA mutation, and anti-proliferatives work by keeping tumors from growing and spreading. Curcumin is special in that it appears to belong to all three groups, meaning it may potentially help prevent and/or arrest cancer cell growth. Researchers have investigated the effects of curcumin on the DNA mutating ability of various carcinogens and found that curcumin was indeed an effective anti-mutagen against several common cancer-causing substances. But these experiments were done in vitro, meaning effectively in a laboratory test tube. After all, it wouldn't be ethical to expose humans to nasty carcinogens to observe whether they got cancer. However, someone got the bright idea of finding a group of people who already, of their own accord, had carcinogens coursing through their veins. Smokers. One way to measure the level of DNA mutating chemicals in people's bodies is by dripping their urine on bacteria growing in a petri dish. Bacteria, like all life on Earth, share DNA as a common genetic language. Unsurprisingly, scientists who tried this experiment found that the urine from non-smokers caused far fewer DNA mutations. After all, they had a lot fewer carcinogens flowing through their systems. But when the smokers were given turmeric, the DNA mutation rate dropped by up to 38%. They weren't given curcumin pills. They merely got less than a teaspoon a day of just the regular turmeric spice you'd find at any grocery store. Of course, turmeric can't completely mitigate the effects of smoking. Even after the participants ate turmeric for a month, the DNA damaging ability of the smoker's urine still exceeded that of the non-smokers. But smokers who make turmeric a staple of their diets may help lessen some of the damage. The anti-cancer effects of curcumin extend beyond its ability to potentially prevent DNA mutations. It also appears to help regulate programmed cell death. Your cells are pre-programmed to die naturally to make way for fresh cells through a process known as apoptosis, from the Greek ptosis, falling, and apo, away from. In a sense, your body is rebuilding itself every few months with the building materials you provide it through your diet. Some cells, however, overstay their welcome, namely cancer cells. By somehow disabling their own suicide mechanisms, they don't die when they're supposed to. Because they continue to thrive and divide, cancer cells can eventually form tumors and potentially spread throughout the body. So how does curcumin affect this process? It appears to have the ability to reprogram the self-destruct mechanism back into cancer cells. All cells contain so-called death receptors that trigger the self-destruction sequence, but cancer cells can disable their own death receptors. Curcumin, however, appears to be able to reactivate them. Curcumin can also kill cancer cells directly by activating what are called execution enzymes, called caspases, inside cancer cells that destroy them from within by chopping up their proteins. Unlike most chemotherapy drugs, against which cancer cells can develop resistance over time, curcumin affects several mechanisms of cell death simultaneously, making it potentially harder for cancer cells to avoid destruction. Curcumin has been found to be effective against a variety of other cancer cells in vitro, including those of the breast, brain, blood, colon, kidney, liver, lungs, and skin. For reasons not fully understood, curcumin seems to leave non-cancerous cells alone. Unfortunately, turmeric has yet to be tested in clinical trials for the prevention or treatment of lung cancer, but with no downsides at culinary doses, I suggest trying to find ways to incorporate the spice into your diet, and I offer a number of suggestions in Part 2. Dietary secondhand smoke. Though the majority of lung cancer is attributed to smoking, approximately a quarter of all cases occur in people who've never smoked. Although some of these cases are due to secondhand smoke, another contributing cause may be another potentially carcinogenic plume: fumes from frying. When fat is heated to frying temperatures, whether it be animal fat such as lard or plant fat such as vegetable oil, toxic volatile chemicals with mutagenic properties, those able to cause genetic mutations, are released into the air. This happens even before the smoke point temperature is reached. If you do fry at home, good ventilation in the kitchen may reduce lung cancer risk. Cancer risk may also depend on what's being fried. A study of women in China found that smokers who stir-fried meat every day had nearly three times the odds of lung cancer compared to smokers who stir-fried foods other than meat on a daily basis. This is thought to be because of a group of carcinogens called heterocyclic amines that are formed when muscle tissue is subjected to high temperatures. We'll talk more about these in Chapter 11. The effects of meat fumes can be hard to separate from the effects of eating the meat itself, but a recent study on pregnant women and barbecuing attempted to tease them out. When meat is grilled, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons are also produced, one of the probable carcinogens in cigarette smoke. The researchers discovered that not only was the ingestion of grilled meat in the third trimester associated with smaller birth weights, mothers merely exposed to the fumes tended to give birth to babies with a birth weight deficit. Exposure to the fumes was also associated with a smaller head size, an indicator of brain volume. Air pollution studies suggest prenatal exposure to these polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons may then translate into adverse effects on children's future cognitive development, as manifested by a significantly lower IQ. Even just living next to a restaurant may pose a health hazard. Scientists estimated the lifetime cancer risk among those residing near the exhaust outlets at Chinese restaurants, American restaurants, and barbecue joints. While exposure to fumes from all three types of restaurants resulted in exposure to unsafe levels of these PAHs, the Chinese restaurants proved to be the worst, This is thought to be due to the amount of fish being cooked, as the fumes from pan-fried fish have been found to contain high levels of these PAHs capable of damaging the DNA of human lung cells. Given the excess cancer risk, the researchers concluded that it would not be safe to live near the exhaust of a Chinese restaurant for more than a day or two a month. What about that enticing aroma of sizzling bacon? The fumes produced by frying bacon contain a class of carcinogens called nitrosamines. Although all meat may release potentially carcinogenic fumes, processed meat like bacon may be the worst. A UC Davis study found that bacon fumes cause about 4 times more DNA mutations than the fumes from beef patties fried at similar temperatures. What about tempeh bacon? Tempeh is a fermented soybean product used to make a variety of meat substitutes. Researchers compared the DNA mutating effects of the fumes from frying bacon and beef to tempeh. The bacon and burger fumes were mutagenic, but the tempeh fumes were not. Nevertheless, it's still not a good idea to eat fried foods. Though no DNA mutations were detected after exposure to tempeh smoke, the fried tempeh itself did cause some DNA mutations, though 45 times fewer than the beef and 346 times fewer than the bacon. The researchers proposed that these findings might account for the higher incidence of respiratory diseases and lung cancer among cooks and lower incidence overall among vegetarians. If you do need to be around frying bacon or eggs, it would be safer to limit your exposure by using an backyard grill. Studies show that the number of particles deposited into the lungs increases by a factor of 10 when frying indoors versus outdoors. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, such as emphysema, chronic bronchitis, is a condition that makes it difficult to breathe and gets worse and worse over time. In addition to shortness of breath, COPD can cause severe coughing, excess mucus production, wheezing, and chest tightness. The disease affects more than 24 million Americans. Smoking is by far and away the leading cause of COPD, but other factors can contribute, such as prolonged exposure to air pollution. Unfortunately, there's no cure for COPD, but there is some good news. A healthy diet may help to prevent COPD and help keep it from getting worse. Data going back 50 years show that a high intake of fruits and vegetables is positively associated with good lung function. Just one extra serving of fruit each day may translate into a 24% lower risk of dying from COPD. On the other hand, a twin pair of studies from Columbia and Harvard universities found that the consumption of cured meat, like bacon, bologna, ham, hot dog, sausage, salami, may increase the risk of COPD. It's thought to be due to the nitrite preservatives in meat, which may mimic the lung-damaging properties of the nitrite byproducts of cigarette smoke. What if you already have the disease? Can the same foods that appear to help prevent COPD be used to treat it? We didn't know until a landmark study was published in 2010. More than 100 COPD patients were randomized into two groups. Half were instructed to boost their fruit and vegetable consumption, while the others remained on their normal diet. Over the next 3 years, the standard diet subjects became progressively worse, as expected. In contrast, the disease progression was halted in the group consuming more fruits and veggies. Not only did their lung function not get worse, it actually improved a little. The researchers suggested this could be due to a combination of the antioxidant and anti-inflammatory effects of the fruits and vegetables, along with a potential reduction in the consumption of meat, which is thought to act as a pro-oxidant. Regardless of the mechanism, a diet with more whole plant foods may help both prevent and arrest the progression of this leading killer. Asthma. Asthma is an inflammatory disease characterized by recurring attacks of narrowed, swollen airways, causing shortness of breath, wheezing, and coughing. Asthma can start at any age, but usually emerges during childhood. One of the most common chronic diseases in kids, asthma's prevalence has been increasing year after year. In the United States, 25 million people suffer from asthma, and 7 million of them are children. A groundbreaking study recently demonstrated that the rates of asthma vary dramatically around the world. It's called the International Study of Asthma and Allergies in Childhood. The study followed more than 1 million children in nearly 100 countries, making it the most comprehensive survey ever undertaken of this disease. The study found a 20-fold to 60-fold difference in the prevalence of asthma, allergies, and eczema. Why does the prevalence of rhinoconjunctivitis, itchy eyes and runny nose, range from 1% of children in parts of India, for instance, to as much as 45% elsewhere? While such factors as air pollution and smoking rates may play a role, the most significant associations were not with what was going into their lungs, but what was going into their stomachs. Adolescents living in areas where more starchy foods, grains, vegetables, and nuts were consumed were significantly less likely to exhibit chronic symptoms of wheezing, allergic rhinoconjunctivitis, and allergic eczema. Boys and girls eating two or more servings of vegetables a day appeared to have only half the odds of suffering from allergic asthma. In general, the prevalence of asthma and respiratory symptoms reportedly appears to be lower among populations eating more foods of plant origin. Foods of animal origin have been associated with increased asthma risk. A study of more than 100,000 adults in India found that those who consumed meat daily, or even occasionally, were significantly more likely to suffer from asthma than those who excluded meat and eggs from their diet altogether. Eggs, along with soda, have also been associated with asthma attacks in children, along with respiratory symptoms such as wheezing, shortness of breath, and exercise-induced coughing. Removing eggs and dairy from the diet has been shown to improve asthmatic children's lung function in as few as 8 weeks. The mechanism by which diet affects airway inflammation may lie with the thin coating of fluid that forms the interface between your respiratory tract lining and the outside air. Using the antioxidants obtained from the fruits and vegetables you eat, this fluid acts as your first line of defense against the free radicals that contribute to asthmatic airway hypersensitivity, contraction, and mucus production. Oxidation byproducts can be measured in exhaled breath and are significantly lowered by shifting toward a more plant-based diet. So if asthmatics eat fewer fruits and vegetables, does their lung function decline? Researchers out of Australia tried removing fruits and vegetables from asthma patients' diets to see what would happen. Within 2 weeks, asthma symptoms grew significantly worse. Interestingly, the low-fruit, low-vegetable diet used in the study, a restriction to no more than one serving of fruit and two servings of vegetables a day, is typical of Western diets. In other words, the diet they used experimentally to impair people's lung function and worsen their asthma was effectively the standard American diet. What about improving asthma by adding fruits and vegetables? Researchers repeated the experiment, but this time increased fruit and vegetable consumption to 7 servings a day. This simple act of adding a few more fruits and vegetables to their daily diet ended up successfully cutting the study subjects' exacerbation rates in half. That's the power of eating healthfully. If it's the antioxidants, why not just take an antioxidant supplement? After all, popping a pill is easier than eating an apple. The reason is simple. Supplements don't appear to work. Studies have repeatedly shown that antioxidant supplements have no beneficial effects on respiratory or allergic diseases, underscoring the importance of eating whole foods rather than trying to take isolated components or extracts in pill form. For example, the Harvard Nurses' Health Study found that women who obtained high levels of vitamin E from a nut-rich diet appeared to have nearly half the risk of asthma compared to those that didn't, but those who took vitamin E supplements saw no benefit at all. Who do you think did better, a group of asthma patients who ate 7 servings a day of fruits and vegetables, or a group who ate 3 servings plus 15, quote-unquote, serving equivalents in pill form? Sure enough, the pills didn't seem to help at all. Improvements in lung function and asthma control were evident only after subjects increased their actual fruit and vegetable intake, strongly suggesting that consuming whole foods is paramount. If adding a few daily servings of fruits and vegetables can have such a significant effect, what if asthma sufferers were put on a diet composed entirely of plant foods? Researchers in Sweden decided to test out a strictly plant-based diet on a group of severe asthmatics who weren't getting better despite the best medical therapies. 35 patients with long-established, physician-verified asthma, 20 of whom had been admitted to hospitals for acute attacks during the previous 2 years. One patient had received emergency intravenous infusions a total of 23 times, another reported he'd been hospitalized more than 100 times, and one subject had even suffered a cardiac arrest after an attack and had to be revived and placed on a ventilator. These were some pretty serious cases. Of the 24 patients who stuck with the plant-based diet, 70% improved after 4 months, and 90% improved within 1 year. And these were all people who had experienced no improvement in their conditions at all in the year prior to switching to a plant-based diet. Within just 1 year of eating healthier, all but two patients were able to drop their dose of asthma medication or get off their steroids and other drugs altogether. Objective measures like lung function and physical working capacity improved. Meanwhile, subjectively, some patients said their improvement was so considerable they felt like they had a new life. There was no control group, so the placebo effect may have accounted for some of the improvement. But the nice thing about a healthier diet is that there are only good side effects. In addition to improvements in their asthma control, the study subjects lost an average of 18 pounds, and their cholesterol and blood pressures got better. From a risk-benefit standpoint, then, it's definitely worth giving a plant-based diet a try. The most lethal lung diseases vary widely in presentation and prognosis. As noted, smoking is far and away the leading cause of lung cancer and COPD, but diseases like asthma typically develop during childhood and can be associated with a range of contributing factors such as low birth weight and frequent respiratory infections. While quitting smoking remains the most effective way to ward off the worst kinds of lung disease, we can also help the body bolster its defenses by eating a diet rich in protective plant foods. The same kind of diet that appears to help severe asthmatics may also help prevent all three diseases from occurring in the first place. If you're one of the millions of Americans who already suffer from lung disease, quitting smoking and changing your diet can still make a difference. It's never too late to start living and eating healthier. The restorative powers of the human body are remarkable, but your body does need your help. By including foods that contain cancer-fighting compounds and loading up on antioxidant-rich fruits and veggies, you may be able to strengthen your respiratory defenses and breathe easier. In my clinical practice, whenever I've felt under too much time pressure to address a patient's smoking or bad dietary habits, I stop and think back to the hideous death of that man in Boston. No one deserves to die like that. I'd like to think no one has to.